Was it not necessary that the Christ should suffer and so enter into his glory? With these words, Jesus shocked the disciples again. Why was suffering necessary for the Christ to enter into his glory? Again, this shock is the whole difference between the Old Testament and the New. In the Old Testament, it was very unclear what happened after this life. Early on, they just thought you went down to the shades. And so they thought that justice, because they knew there was a God, had to be administered in this life. If you're good, you'd be rewarded. If you're bad, you'd had to be punished in this life. Still, the Psalms and the book of Job and such will say, why do the good suffer? Why do the wicked prosper? They raise these questions for us. Well, only later on did they begin to become aware that God has another life for us, and that sometimes justice won't be administered until the next life. In other words, he has heaven in store for us if we're good, otherwise to separate from him altogether if we choose to not follow him. But there's another life after this one. And finally, the resurrection of the body. This was simply unknown in the times of the Old Testament. And even when Jesus was coming among them, he who is the resurrection and the life, they came upon the man who was born blind. And the disciples said, how did this happen? Was it his sin or was it the sin of his parents? In other words, they thought that nothing this bad could happen. You couldn't read the Torah, therefore you couldn't be saved. How could this happen without sin? Jesus says, no, you're misunderstanding. It's that the glory of God might be revealed. So he's changing their thinking. He's challenging their thinking, and still they didn't understand. Three times he proclaims to them that he's going to have to suffer. Three times he gives them this great warning. He describes the whole thing. He's saying how the Son of Man is going to be handed over to the scribes and the Pharisees, and he's going to be put to death and rise on the third day. Three times he says that, and they don't get it. Three times. Peter says to him, God forbid any such thing ever happen to you. And Jesus stops him right there. And he says, get behind me, Satan. You're not judging as God does, but as man does. We got this Old Testament and New Testament divide being manifested again. There's a difference in how God sees things. We have to start with that. Now, you remember now, Jesus doesn't set aside any part of the law. The Old Testament law, the Ten Commandments are still valid. But he goes beyond that. It's not enough that you not kill. You mustn't grow angry with your brother. It's not enough to not commit adultery. You must be pure of heart. He goes even further than the Old Testament law. He's challenging the way that we think. And sometimes we're just not ready for that. Well, what he's challenging today is the whole notion of suffering itself. Now, suffering is not a good in itself. Suffering is not a direct cause of sanctity. Yet, it is indispensable. The good thief and the bad thief were both crucified. Only one was saved, the one who united his sufferings to those of Jesus. So in other words, we're not worshiping suffering. We're not saying suffering is good for its own sake. But united to Christ, it has value. It has meaning. It has purpose. So love itself is sanctity, and love is indispensable. But love is proven in suffering. Love is proven in hardships. We mustn't set that aside. Now again, the challenge for us is that we live in such a fallen world that we think the very purpose of life we idealize is pleasure and power and wealth. We demonize pain and sorrow. We see things not as God sees them, but as man sees them. And Jesus is challenging us. We're living not quite on the right track. We're avoiding suffering at all expenses. We're trying to live every bit of comfort and pleasure we can eke out of life. And then we regret death when it finally comes. And you say to yourself, are we really his disciples? Now, he challenges his disciples. He's challenging them to take up their cross and follow him. In other words, because we're disciples, because we put on the new man by baptism, taken on Jesus Christ, we've also taken on his destiny. And the destiny is the cross and resurrection for him and for us. The cross and the resurrection is ours as well. And again, I mean that, the resurrection, not just for Jesus, but for us. We have to embrace the cross. Now, the disciples understood this, the real faithful ones. They meditate on the Lord. They meditate on his life. But it had to get past a lot of confusion. Remember, even John the Baptist in prison, he says, are you he who is to come, or do we look for another? John said that because he was expecting a triumphant Messiah who would ride in on a war horse and take over the city and drive out the Romans and be a glorious majesty. And Jesus says that's not the answer. He says to the disciples, go and tell John what you see and hear. The blind see, The deaf hear, the mute speak, the dead are raised, and the poor have the good news preached to them. That was the essence of the prophecy of Isaiah. And Jesus is fulfilling all of that. He's telling John, I am he. The glory awaits the second coming of Jesus. The glory awaits that time. That's the time we're going to see all the things manifested. But he is the Messiah, and you and I follow after him. Mysteriously, we find that the religious in our communities take on the fullness of life, and we should be thinking about them. We actually want to imitate them. Remember, they practice the Beatitudes. You know, blessed are the poor, blessed are those who hunger, blessed those who weep. All of those, these are the Beatitudes. And we find that the religious in our midst do that. They practice poverty, chastity, obedience. And they take on the likeness of Christ, not by getting more pleasure, more comfort, more money, but by living with less and living with simplicity. And they find that the kingdom of heaven is within. It's a very different way. And we find that when you and I imitate them, first of all, for instance, by our tithing, I mean a real tithe, I mean a real 10%. When we separate our fingers away from the things that money and money can buy, we find ourselves united to Christ. When we voluntarily endure hardships, we find ourselves united to Christ. These are the marks of a disciple. It's very different. You realize that in America, we are not ready for that. I was talking with someone the other day about the whole question of what happened back in World War II when they had rationing. Do you know that the whole country came together under two auspices, God and country, love of God and love of country, and everybody came together and they rationed food, they rationed gasoline. You couldn't get all kinds of things. Many, many foods were rationed. Sugar was rationed. Gasoline was rationed. Depending what kind of job you had, you'd get a green card or a red card, and you only get a certain number of gallons per week. And the speed limit was 35 miles an hour. And all of this was to unite the people together. They grew victory gardens in their yards in order to provide some of their own food. The people are united together. Do you think that America could endure rationing today? Do you think there would be utter rebellion? I don't think we're prepared for anything like that. And yet, some voluntary self-sacrifice is good for us. Do you know one of the things I lament? I lament the end of the draft. Do you know the draft ended in 1973? And the draft meant that everybody, and I'd like to see it reinstituted, seriously, the draft, so that everybody, even college students as well, no exemptions, everybody has to serve 2 years. And you find yourself then in basic training. One of the great writers talking about this, he says, the beauty of basic training is that you can always remember, no matter how bad your life gets after this, there was a time when life was worse. It's important that we have hardships in our lives. It's important that we make young boys into men. And the military service does that. It also shows them that your life, for the sake of the country, costs you something. It's going to cost you 2 years of your life. You are not your own, and you have to be for the sake of others. And it actually makes men. A wonderful thing, much lacking today. We need it actually to be restored. Not for the sake of wars, but for the sake of making men. You know, I often say that one of the blessings of farms, one of the beauties of farms, wasn't just the produce that it gave to the world. It's that farmers gave to the world young men who are able to work. That was one of the great fruits of farms. Young men capable. And we need that again. We have to rebuild that again. So don't think that hardship is bad and comfort is good. That could be a big mistake in our thinking. Hardship can be good for us. Suffering can be good. Not that we worship suffering, but that it can build character if we're on the right track. We live in difficult times. Difficult because they're too luxurious. Difficult because no one in the world has ever lived in the luxuries that you and I enjoy now, even as ordinary people. But it hasn't made us better. So we should look back again to the example of Jesus. Do we think like him? Have we taken on a New Testament thinking? Or are we still in the Old Testament? Are we thinking with the mind of Christ? Are we willing to set aside some of our comforts and pleasures in order that we might be better men and women, better families, doing the right thing? I suggest that, for instance, to take out, instead of going to sports all the time, can you imagine if some of us right here in church went to every school board meeting in the district? Can you imagine if we sent 50 people from our parish to every school board meeting that happens? Can you imagine the voice that we might begin to have to shape our own society? It's a sacrifice. A lot of times it's going to be boring. But along the way, some good is going to be accomplished because you did it. You sacrificed. You spent yourself for God and country. Jesus is calling us to this because we have the hope of resurrection, because we have a better life in store for us than this one. He's calling us to change the way we think. Was it not necessary that the Christ should suffer and so enter into his glory?